Hello, Vlad, and welcome to my podcast.
Hi, Daniela. It's really nice to be here. I mean, at home, but still here. Because someone ate a bat. And now we have to do it like this. But thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. I'm not sure if I should call you Vlad or maybe Vladislav. And maybe, should I just say, Vladislav, baby, don't hurt me.
Damn it. Whatever you want, any of those three. I think you'll get tired of singing a song every time you see me. So maybe Vlad will be helpful.
I mean, I'm stealing your own joke, to be fair. But I was listening on YouTube, I think, one of your gigs. I couldn't find much about you, but I did find this joke and I found it really hilarious. As all the jokes, to be fair.
That is my first ever joke. The first ever written joke.
Was it? When did it occur to you? That, oh my God, this is my name.
Yeah, because I was in high school and I was trying to come up with a stage name. It was like a thing. Everyone was trying to come up with a stage name that day. And I split my name, Vladislav, into three parts. And I saw it. It was there. It was like, oh my God, Vlad is love.
Oh.
And so that joke has been with me since I was 16, pretty much.
Wow. So you're saying about the stage name. Did you always know that you wanted to be on stage?
Oh, yeah. So basically, I did a few projects as an actor, but it was like I was a child and it was these like amateurish sort of projects. But I realized even since then, I was always put in the comedy bit. You know what I mean? Like, they never wanted me for the serious main role. They wanted me as the comic relief in the story. And I realized that there's something with me that's wrong. if they don't want to put me as the main guy, no. So comedy was definitely a big element of my life from long ago, and I kind of discovered along the way stand-up. So I said, you know what? This is it. This is what I need to do. This is my life's calling. And so I've been a comedian since last Friday. It's been amazing since.
I swear to God, before starting this interview, I was telling my boyfriend, I said, I already expect I'm going to laugh so much with Vlad. Because even from your replies on Instagram, I was just reading them. I just couldn't stop laughing.
yeah. Well, you know, we got to get those followers in, you know. Get those, that's important.
Yes. Okay, sorry, continue. Okay, when you discovered stand-up and till you actually started to, I mean, without the joke now, when did you actually start doing it?
Yeah, so being serious.
Yes. Well, no, I'll expect you not to be serious most of the time because I love that. But just so that I try to find out when you actually started.
Yeah. So we can get some facts in all the lies and the jokes.
Because I was trying to load your website and, oh, still a day to go until it's launched. So I don't know anything about you.
Oh, yeah. So I had to kind of put the website under maintenance. And I'm going to relaunch it when I do my first tour of the UK. So that's the first serious thing I've done.
Okay.
And there was a robot, right, on the website.
Oh my God, yes, it was so friendly. Oh, hello, my name is Vlad. What's your name? I put Daniela. Oh, hi, Daniela. Nice to meet you.
Okay, so a bit too friendly.
No, because then it said, do you want to find out more? Yes, or it's boring, I don't want to find out. And then the joke started. No, it was actually funny and friendly, so, yeah.
It was a funny, friendly robot. Okay.
Yes.
So I'm glad I've put my skills to the test. My brother actually made that, not me. That's a lie. So the website, yeah. So basically, my first ever event was, I was 16. Mm-hmm. And it was in my hometown of Kumanovo, which is very close to the Serbian border, this town. Anyway, I rented my sound equipment to a local comedian. I didn't even want to go on stage. And this guy went on stage and he went into this new bit that was just not working. Like, people were just not laughing. And he invited me on the stage to tell a joke. So I told one joke and that's how it began. Obviously, when I got off the stage, I said, I can't take this seriously because I was too interested in chasing girls at the time. I was 16. So the hormones were all over the place. I mean, you know, and obviously I was brainwashed by the whole Hollywood romantic film. Oh, you did, you're going to meet the one. And and then I got myself a dog and that was great. So much better.
So much better, isn't it? Unconditional love all the time.
Exactly.
And it's fluffy.
And it's fluffy, and it doesn't talk back. So I've got all three points. But then what happened was I moved to Malta, and I lived there, and I studied there.
Yes.
I lived there for about 4 years, and towards the end of my studies, I'd done a few stand-up shows, and I was at a crossroad of my life, because I was kind of not happy with the uni. I was studying like something between philosophy and theater theory and performance art. And I was thinking, right, this is not it for me. So what I did was I decided to move to London to pursue stand-up comedy. Wow, I'm getting really serious.
I'm interested about the style of comedy because as we know in the UK, the style of comedy is more sarcastic. And did you always have this kind of comedy in mind?
Yeah. So I think European humor is more direct. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's more direct. It's more in your face, and it has sometimes, you know, like when I first came to London, mm-hmm. when I watched the British comedians, sometimes I would just not find it funny at all. And the crowd would be laughing, and I'm like, "What is there something wrong with me, or is it the crowd?" What? And but then it would be vice versa, you know. British people would come to an international show, like we used to do this Eastern European Comedy Festival in Camden, and usually the lineup would be comedians from Romania, Bulgaria, Lithuania, Croatia, and you know, so British people, a part of it, you know, the people that want to come for it would laugh. But those that were like, oh, this is different, this is new, I think because British humor has this ingrained double meanings,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
everything is always kind of indirect. I think, like, and I think especially Eastern Europe draws a lot of influence from American humor.
Mm-hmm.
So because we are more sort of the people that, you know, if we're like here, people are fake polite. You know what I mean? Like, thank you and sorry, all of this, but you don't really mean it.
Yeah.
Like, I think in Eastern Europe, if you don't mean it, you don't say it.
I think this is why I'm moody a lot of the time. I think you can see when I'm not happy on my face. I'm not trying to be too polite. Although, yeah, I guess I am. I say a lot of sorry and thank you, but my face is showing a lot of...
other emotions, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why, like, because... Here they don't really like talk about their feelings to like they don't really open up, do they? Especially south of England, I would say. And you know, for me to bottle everything up and then I'll probably die at 45 out of a heart attack. Like I have to say what I need to say. I mean, obviously being in a relationship with someone, there's that normal human being just like anybody else. I think just I'm talking about some generalities.
Yeah, sure. Obviously. Yeah. It's interesting, though, because for me, for example, when I came to the UK, I kind of felt offended by a lot of the British jokes. But then once I started getting into them, I'm actually finding it extremely hilarious. I don't know. Did you have that kind of or did you still not find British jokes funny? Again, it's too general because there are so many types of comedy. But how did you get more into the British comedy when you moved here?
Absolutely, but here's the thing, that when I first came, I think my all-time favorite comic is Dylan Moran. So, and he's Irish, so still a bit kind of departed from that dry, very dry English humor, right? But again, still very British, but I really like him because he's kind of a mix between that European and British mentality, and he's very esoteric and he's very poetic, and I mean he's very middle class, you know, but in an Irish sense of way. And I really loved his performance because it has that perfect mix between I'll tell you everything in your face. So it is direct, but it's said in such a British way of like, you know what I mean? I'm telling you, but I'm not telling you. And I love that. I started to love that about the British and the humor here.
So I just searched because I didn't recognize the name when you said it, but now that I saw pictures of him, it's the guy from the Black Book. Black
Yes,
Books, isn't
the
it?
Black Books guy.
Oh my God, I've seen the sitcom. I found it so funny.
He's brilliant.
He's
It's really
really good.
strange how a lot of people know him from the sitcom, but not from the stand-up. Yeah.
Yeah,
For
I
me.
think I've seen one stand up with him. Just one, not many. Now, after this conversation with you, I'm gonna have to go and look him up and like listen properly to his jokes.
Watch the Monster comedy special, 2008. It's
Wait, I'll
his
write it
best
down.
one, I think.
Monster comedy special.
Yeah, 2008, I think
Wait.
Dylan Moran and Jim Jefferies had the best
Okay.
stand-up special of their career, in my opinion.
A look. I'm sure that my boyfriend knows about it, but I'm as usual catching up with a lot of stuff.
Of course, of
That
course.
just reminded me, by the way. So just before this call, I was trying to type your name in, and I wrote Vlad Ilic, right? Is this how you pronounce it? So I just typed it in, I put enter, and the results came with Lenin.
Of course. I would have expected.
Oh my God, not that Vlad. And also you're Vladislav, but he's Vladimir, but I was just
That's
like,
pretty good.
what?
Vlad Ilyich. I didn't tell you, I'm the great grandson.
Was going to ask you what's your relation with Lenin.
I'm hiding in the UK from the Russians, from Putin. The last royal.
You've had a lot of operations done to your face.
I had to. I mean, I was born bald because that's just genetics. But then they had to replant my hair. And I actually went to the same surgeon as Boris Johnson did. So,
My
and Trump. We were in the waiting room together.
And you have the same hairstylist, right?
Same, different PR person. Different PR person. Obviously, they went into a whole different territory. I decided to fight for the good of the people. They decided to fight for the good of the money. That's where our friendship ended.
Go, Vlad,
But Lenin would be proud of me. Lenin would.
Yes, of course.
Sure, I'm showing a lot of socialist traits. Solidarity for the people.
Yes.
You know that one of the first happenings that when I came here to England, like the first time I came, I was in Newcastle for only a week, and my English was really bad, and I had this really awkward conversation. One guy told me, "Where are you from?" And I said, "I'm Vlad Ilich." And he said, "What village?" And then another guy came and he said, "Hi, I'm Mark." And I said, "I'm Vlad Ilich, nice to meet you." And I pointed at the other guy. I said, "And his name is Vlad, what village?" And fucking.
But talking about where are you from, so I had a couple of times when people asked me where I am from, and when I said Moldova, they said, "Oh yeah, Moldova, you're from former Yugoslavia." I'm like, "Nah, it's a little bit of a different country."
It's just slightly more to the east.
Which is fine. I mean, I don't expect people to know where Moldova is. But did you get any sort of like funny reactions?
You touched on a really good point here because for most people in the West think that everything east of Germany is Russia, pretty much. Or either that or we all speak Russian anyway. So, and that's why I have that about where they keep asking me, in the end I just go Russia. It's like,
oh my god, I posted that joke of yours because you put it on Instagram as well with different images, and I just like reposted everyone. Joke is so funny. You just like give up. It's like, Russia, okay.
Russia. Whatever, Russia, just leave me alone. I don't want to talk to you. So it happens all the time, even to my friend from Serbia. Oh, Syria, there's a war there. No, Serbia. Ah, Siberia, it's cold there. Just like... constant, it's like they're in denial, they don't want to. I think they are scared to pronounce it right, because then they have to open a conversation about a country they know fuck all about. Sorry for swearing.
I mean, I'm not great at geography. I used to remember all countries and capitals and stuff, and then something happened to my memory and I'm just like, I'm not that good at geography. But I also find it funny when I tell people where I'm from, because also we used to be part of Romania, so I consider myself Romanian, but I say Moldovan abroad on purpose because I find it funny when I tell people where I'm from. And yes, some people think Moldova is actually Maldives, and they tell me like, oh, it's really hot in there. I'm like, because it's
like, oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and they look at my skin and I think, oh, what? They look confused. And yeah, it's quite funny. And actually, they even made a game board called Where is Moldova? Because I think the question is way too often, where is Moldova?
Oh my God. They shouldn't write a game board, Where is Moldova? The game board should be, why is our geography teaching failing? That is the real question.
Yes.
I think also partly this stereotype was enhanced when Sacha Baron Cohen did Borat, obviously.
Yeah.
And he did with Kazakhstan. Or a Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he did Kazakhstan. That's right.
Do you know what? Let me just reveal a secret, though. You know, he actually, where he films and they say it's Kazakhstan, they actually speak Romanian?
Really?
Yeah, in both movies.
See, I noticed, because even in the second movie, the little girl speaks Bulgarian, because I can understand Bulgarian.
Really?
Yeah, the little girl speaks Bulgarian.
Oh, because the actress on the second movie, she's Bulgarian.
Yeah, exactly. She speaks Bulgarian and he speaks Hebrew.
So you understand that. Does he? Oh my God, I did not know that. But the little part in the second movie, when there was that guy sending him to... back to America. Yeah. He speaks Romanian, because he was at the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie. And then when they were in the village in the first movie, that was Romanian as well, because I'm thinking, that is Romanian!
Exactly. But
I didn't know he speaks Hebrew, though. I thought he's inventing words.
Yeah, I think it's like a mix between Hebrew and gibberish Hebrew, sort of. Because he's Jewish, Sacha Baron Cohen, no?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, so, he is, I think.
Yeah, so he's just sort of coming up with... I have a funny story, actually, for him. One guy that I met here in the comedy industry, he had, who's a comedy agent, and one of his clients had landed a job with Sacha Baron Cohen, and he had to go and read the script with Sacha Baron Cohen, so they flew them out to Los Angeles, where he lives. Mm-hmm. And so they went up this really narrow, long uphill road in Beverly Hills. You know how the houses are and whatever and not. Mm-hmm. So they went all the way up this hill and they get to this huge sort of palace. And the agent was like, he thought they were going to like a production studio, but they actually came to Sacha Baron Cohen's house. Mm-hmm. It says there's this huge walls, you know, huge doors, 7-8 feet tall. And they ring the buzzer and Sacha Baron Cohen lets them in. And they walk in and he's in his garden in his underwear, like just throwing some water on the flowers, just kind of gardening.
Normal day.
Yeah, just a normal day. I'm like, that's Borat. He is Borat. He lives there. Just in slippers and underwear. Just come in.
Yeah. Oh my God. Do you think that when you play different roles? Do you think that you kind of become one? Do you play a role on stage, or are you just being yourself?
That's a good question. I think every comedian has a persona on stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's like somewhere between a role and yourself. It's an elevated self, I like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about in you that changes when you talk to a group of people, and I don't know what it is actually, but like an element of me, definitely I have a persona, and it goes different ways. Really, in the beginning it was really confusing, because one day it would go one way, the other day I would go a bit, you know, like I would go dark, then I would go see, I would be goofy, then I would be a bit like Jimmy Carr type of, you know. It's until you kind of settle in and ground yourself and find what best works for you. But every comedian will tell you that the most liberating moment on stage is when you stop caring completely and just be yourself. That's the essence of stand-up comedy. That's when people will love you the most, because they will see you at your truest self, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're giving them a choice. You're kind of giving them respect by telling them, listen, I'm not putting on anything. I'm not lying to you. This is who I am, and this is what I find funny. Take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they don't really like your taste of humor, they'll still appreciate your courage to do that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This is my third serious thing I said.
We'll keep a list on that.
Up to five.
Okay. I'll just let you know when the fifth one expires, and then we stop talking about serious stuff. I was going to say that it's a bit similar in painting, because it's just finding your style, but realizing that actually you just go to truth when you feel that you're true to yourself, and you kind of get maybe influenced by some artists or others, but then you just have to go back to just being yourself rather than trying to copy someone or be like someone. Just again, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, yeah. It's getting way too serious again. I just wanted to I changed the subject, but I wanted to go back actually to Sacha Baron Cohen and ask you what do you think about it, because I think it's very controversial. A lot of people I've seen, a lot of people are commenting being from Kazakhstan, and they feel very offended. And in a way, I mean, I kind of understand what the purpose of Sasha to actually, he wants to highlight all those, I don't know, issues in society through a very eccentric way. But I understand what he's trying to do. However, it's very controversial. Yeah. But I still watch his comedy. So what do you think about it? If you want to express yourself, it's not necessary. To reply to my question.
No, absolutely, I'd love to. Well, this is what I think, Daniela, is that on a bigger scale, it is hypocritical, because, for example, remember that like a few months ago they took down that sitcom, they canceled it. Little Britain, right?
Yeah.
Right, and they moved it because it was sort of, you know, they were taking the piss out of minorities and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But and then they were saying, oh, we are highlighting the problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
But people still were like offended by it and blah blah. Mm-hmm. So and then at the same time, now it's because it's another group of people 5,000 miles east.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they don't take it down.
Yeah, then that's okay, because we are the West and we are superior, and it's funny because it's true, and this is how these people are. So that side is very hypocritical, but on the other side, you have just the comedy, and the comedy is, I mean, there are no rules in comedy. What's funny is funny.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's controversial, but even I watched the first Borat and the second Borat, because he's brilliant at what he does. That's what he does. He's a comedian. And having a conversation about these things is definitely important. And to what extent? I think it would what would really be nice now to happen is you know, someone in Kazakhstan to actually go and do like a Joe, average Joe type of thing in America.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So it's now the it's like a competition. The comedians there need to kind of come up with something to fight back.
Yeah, but apparently, I mean, from what I read, so you know, in Kazakhstan, when the first movie was on, they absolutely didn't allow it to be showed in Kazakhstan, and they were really offended and stuff. But then when the second one appeared, I think they used it as tourism strategy, or not when, because now because of the pandemic people can't travel, but
yeah,
I think after a while they realized that actually it people will increase this, tourism and it will help to boost the economy, obviously not now but in general, so I think they kind of started using it in their own advantage now.
Well, the thing is, they really can't do anything about it, you know. It's not like they can go and sue Hollywood on U.S. grounds. I mean, you can't make a lawsuit like that. So might as well, you know what I mean? I might as well use it.
Yeah.
I think the audience will be always divided. And I'll tell you this from personal experience. So, for example, when I go out and when I do jokes about, like, where I come from, I like to be sort of like, I'll do, like, I have this, a few self-deprecating sort of bits because I like that sort of kind of giving value to your culture by sort of making fun of it, if you know what I mean. But, and so 80% of the crowd will appreciate that in a positive way. Like they would come out of the show and want to know more about where I'm from and this. But there would be 20% where this joke actually enhances their view of their stereotypical view of the country. Do you know what I mean? Like they don't really get past the face value of what I'm saying. And Dave Chappelle had this brilliant interview where he said that he didn't like how someone laughed at one of his jokes. It was like a racist laughter type of thing. And I mean, that's very specific, but you can tell from the audience how they look at you, you know, body language and whatnot, and their laughter and what they come and say to you after the show is what you can tell what they really think about your part of the world. And, you know, what was I trying to get at? So, yeah, so even when Borat is going being shown in US cinemas, you will have a lot of people going to visit Kazakhstan, right? But then you will also have, you know, the Joes, the old Joes, the rednecks in South Carolina, and all these people who keep alligators in their house and chew tobacco, you know, the redneck, and waving their Confederate flags going, ah, Kazakhstan, they're all a bunch of gypsies, you know, the whole lot. So
yeah,
those people are not going to change, and that movie won't help them. But again, can anybody help these people? I don't know. I don't have an answer, and that is the fourth serious thing I said.
Okay, I best not ask you any serious questions. I just wanted to ask you because you touched on stereotypes. So what are the stereotypes did you encounter? Because you make such a funny joke about I came here to steal your job. No, I came here to steal jobs, not yours, the Romanian's job.
Yes,
I found it so funny. I like how you make fun of that. But is there anything else that you noticed as being a stereotype or something like that, but you can still make fun of it?
Well, you know, it's also the food. Like, people most of the time think I'm also Polish. When I say Vladislav, they say, oh yeah, Polish. And they always think I'm like that somehow I always eat potato and cabbage. Like, that's just what I have. Like, our houses are built of cabbage. You know, they think cabbage is really important in our culture. And I always like play on that. I never tell them. I say, yeah, cabbage is really important. Actually, if a woman doesn't want to get pregnant, she eats cabbage every morning. That's yes. Also, it helps stabilize her period and everything. It has very nurturing, healthy attributes. And
It's
people,
so
we
cute.
have like this giant cabbage in the middle of our town, and we worship it every Christmas. We gather around the big cabbage, around our cabbage god, and we light a fire to it.
Oh my God, where do you invent this stuff? You have a very wild imagination.
It just comes into my head. I can't help myself. It's there, whether I use it or not. So there's that. There's the food thing, and then there's also the belief that somehow we are all like travelers, like that we don't really have houses, that we're just born and we migrate, and that we have vodka or rakia for breakfast or panita. Like that's like a thing. They think we wake up and yes, we fight and we drink and let's go and burn a village, and eat the fresh carcass from the yesterday hunt. So definitely they think we have this sort of tribal understanding of us, that we are some tribes fighting for the sake of fighting, because that's who we are. But I love telling them all the false information about this.
Oh, that's quite fun. But like you touched on drinking as well. That's a big subject for
Especially since people in the UK drink a lot.
I know. Okay, so I was talking to Mo, which you know, and he was asking like, oh, you know, tell me a little bit about Moldova. Do you guys drink a lot? And I was like, well, actually, I found that since I came to the UK, I find that people drink way much more in quantities in here, especially beer. And I was telling him how, like, I couldn't understand the concept of you trying to go and eat something, but they go to the pub and want to drink on the empty stomach. And I can't really do that. And I was like, well, really, we just eat a lot and we drink with our food. Like, only when I came to the UK, I found it really weird to have like 6 pints of beer before you eat. Like, I can't do that because I just want to eat. And then with my food, I can have, I don't know, wine or beer or whatever. So I kind of, I thought the same. Like, you know, I thought that here in quantities, like people drink more. And then I checked some statistics on, and I found what I was telling you about the Guinness World Record of how much spirits we drink apparently in Moldova. Like we smashed the records. I'm thinking, how is this happening? I can't remember
Really?
drinking so much. I don't know.
All of the Balkans is the same thing. I mean, we have usually the more traditional people have the rakia, which is like a. Do you know what rakia is?
Yeah, they have it in Romania as well. We call
All
it
right, perfect.
rakiu.
Rakia, yeah. So
Yeah.
that, and obviously every Balkan country claims it as their own national
Yeah.
drink, because we all love each other and we're very united. So usually like rakia with a salad, like one or two, maybe three before lunch, and then with lunch you have beer or wine, and then you just keep drinking without eating. Like those are two separate things. But also I think what every other normal person does, except for the English, is that we drink as a side thing to a nice conversation, while here people drink to have a conversation. It's, you
Oh,
know what I mean?
yeah.
Yeah, like they have to get drunk to get to loosen up and to relax. And especially like the people that I see, like I have some friends here, we usually go camping with them. And they're both British, they're both English. And they're nice people. They're a bit chatty, but they're always a bit reserved when they're sober. And then once I took them camping and I got them drunk, man, they just like they opened up completely, like everything came out. It was like fireworks, just like wow, you are that person. Okay, I would have not known that. Wow, my friend is an idiot. I still love you, but and then tomorrow they go back to the hello, are you right? Yeah, cheers, thank you, bye. To the whole reserve type of thing. So it is, that's a bit of a weird element in this culture, but I find it fascinating. I find it interesting very much about British people, yeah.
In Moldova, we say that you show your true character when you're drunk.
Exactly. In vino veritas, no? In vino veritas.
Oh, that's another serious thing that you just said. That's fifth on the list.
Is it?
It sounded like so, like, you know, philosophical.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's this one is like just a cold fact. So yeah.
Okay. We don't consider it as the fifth.
Yeah, it's
you're still allowed one.
Yeah.
So tell me about camping then. Do you just go with the tent?
Yeah, this was just going with tents. Yeah, we'd go camping with tents.
I love that. I love that too.
Yeah, we would go to, I mean, last time we went to Epping Forest, just outside London, and my friend, he's an ex-soldier, so he knows a lot of quirky, little interesting, helpful, practical things, you know.
Survival skills.
Yeah, survival skills. Exactly. That's the one. And his girlfriend is also, she's mad when it comes to camping. She's got all the gear. She knows all the trends about boots and clothes and tents and stuff. So we really I really learn a lot from them. And then, you know, they'll talk about camping for like 2 hours until we get there and we sit down and we start drinking. And then after it's like, whoop, the real person comes out. No, it's not camping anymore. No, it's about Saudi Arabia and why there's no rights for women there. And then it's about Trump and it's about, you know, all the other facets of their personality comes out.
Yeah. Proper deep conversations.
Yeah, proper.
The true opinions.
yeah.
Truth comes out.
Okay, six serious conversations.
So what do you miss when you're here?
In terms of like phrases or in terms of
anything you want to talk about?
Oof. Well, I miss a few things.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I miss the bakeries, like, and the stuff that you can, like, the 24/7 bakeries, because usually we would get drunk, and then around 3-4 a.m. we go for a burek, which is like this meat pie, or there's like this croissant with ham and cheese that we make, which is just amazing, and I you can't get that stuff here. You just I mean, you can get burek, but
it's not the same.
Yeah, it's not the same, and it's not 24/7, and I have to travel to the other side of London to get it. And then what I miss is this whole thing of, you know, Macedonians, because most of us are unemployed, we have time to just sit around and joke and banter and literally do football all day. This is what I don't miss, is the politics. Mm-hmm. Oh, everything is so political. Everything has a double meaning. You know, oh, he's working with NATO. They're controlling the weather and all these all these conspiracies.
Oh, my God.
But I really miss that. Just sitting down and sort of bantering. You can sit down in the middle of the day and have 5 coffees and just talk for hours. Literally do nothing.
Is this why you decided to be a comedian?
Exactly. This is one of the reasons. This is one. Another one was because every other job somehow seems boring to me. The whole 9-to-5, I couldn't buy into that. Mm-hmm. And also, I like to sleep a lot. Mm-hmm. So what is a job in which I can sleep a lot? And first, I worked night shift in a hotel, so I can sleep during the day because I don't like waking up early. But then I thought, no, this is way too much effort. I need to make this. What is the most lazy way of getting out of life's problems and getting paid? And comedy was just up there. Number one, you work for literally, I wake up at 2 p.m., I have coffee, lunch, a few drinks. At 6 p.m., I go to the club. By 9 p.m., I am done. That's it. I can go back home and play video games.
Oh, sounds like an amazing lifestyle. But,
actually, it sounds amazing, but I did lie a little bit. You have to write a lot. Otherwise, you know, you have to find ideas, no?
No, of course. I mean, I was telling you before we recorded this, I find your job as a very, very important job, and I know there is a lot of thought and a lot of things you need to think about, and you need to write a lot, and you can't just, I imagine if I see, you know, a routine on the stage, you worked a lot for it. You built up those jokes for a long time. So I know it's a lot of work, but it's so important because we just need to stay happy and laugh about things. So I think your job is really important. I don't know, we're joking about this, but I think I as the same as you do, I realize I just can't do an office job anymore, a 9 to 5. So I decided to do painting and podcasting instead. And I'll just tell you quickly how Mark described what I do to his colleagues.
Go for it.
He was just like, "Oh, she watches TV, stalks people on the internet, and then has a chat."
That's pretty much it in those words.
I mean, of course, there's a lot more work that goes into it, editing and, you know, like all this time spent doing it and, you know, but yeah, if you describe it, it's pretty much the same as you describe comedy. You just like, you know, you just sleep and whatever.
The joke. And I think
Yeah.
also it's kind of less scary when a woman stalks than when a man stalks.
Oh my God,
If you were a
exactly.
man doing the podcast, it would be like probably get reported for harassment.
Oh my God, can you imagine? I'm lucky. But yeah,
Definitely.
I like being a stalker.
That's I like being stalked, so
Oh.
there.
Oh. I wanted to ask, what do you like in the UK? And it's not, although you probably touched on this already here and there, but what do you really like in the UK?
Well, I think maybe this is more specific to London rather than all of Britain. But I really love this mentality of not being judged at all, like in terms of, or maybe I don't know, maybe it's just really internalized here and nobody tells you, but they secretly everyone judges you. I think like people here, they really judge your skills. So that definitely, which I like because that's how we improve in our work. But no one judges you for who you are. And I think that's a really big plus. I think in the Balkans in general, we have a bit of that sort of, I mean, when I was growing up, definitely there was a bit of that kind of judgmental thing of who you are or who your family is and who they voted for in the last election and all of this, and things of which you don't really have control over, you know. I think sometimes like our mentality is a bit sort of that a bit harsher, you know. Then that's why we had communism because we love that strictness, we love that. So that is what I think it's lacking back home. That's one thing. And the seventh serious thing, I think we got over the limit. This is
That's
practically a TED talk now. Now I will tell you about the Balkan War and
let's not get into this.
I was going to say another thing, but I forgot.
Oh,
Yeah, I
means
think.
it wasn't important. And it
Yeah,
wasn't important enough for you to remember it.
exactly.
So do you want to tell me what you also told me on Instagram, why you got your gig on BBC?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The gig. Oh, Vlad, the gig. That's like the most important thing. Because yeah. I won this competition called Up the Creek in it's sorry, the comedy club is called Up the Creek. It's the oldest comedy club in London, in Greenwich. And I was getting ready to pack my bags and leave back home. I had spent 2 years trying to do stand-up comedy, trying to make it as a pro comedian. And people were telling me, you're funny, but no doors were not opening. And I was turning 27. I was like, I have to find a career or somewhere, you know, I need money, I need a job. This can't go on forever. So I said, this is the last competition that I'm going to do. And if it doesn't go anywhere, I'm going to have a chat with my girlfriend and maybe move into another direction, like car washing or plumbing.
I just remembered the jokes about car washing.
those parking attendant, whatever. All the minimum wage jobs you can think of. McDonald's. And do you want fries with that?
You got the qualities for it.
So I got to the finals of this competition,
Yeah.
and the judge panel, the guest was the one of the three or four main commissioners of BBC Comedy, which means all of the comedy that get casted on all the channels, BBC One, Two, Three, and Four. This guy was kind of deciding whether or not those shows go on there. So pretty important. And I was sweating a lot. Like, I was like, woohoo, like, this is it, this is big. So it was tough, and there was lots of voting from the crowd, and I won by a landslide, but I won it. I won the
Yay.
competition, and he came to congratulate me, and he said, I really like you. I've never seen a Macedonian comic. I'd love to see more of you. Let's keep in touch. Now, I thought, this is the very healthy skeptic Balkan man of me thinking, yeah, if you're telling me this, we'll keep in touch, polite, yada yada, probably I'm never gonna see you again. But that was last year, and a year later, he picked up the phone and he called me and he said, listen,
Oh.
BBC Three is producing this new show. We need new talents, new fresh talents in the country. Would you like to come? Unfortunately, I just come from Malta. Because my girlfriend is Maltese, so we just came from Malta, and I was in quarantine. And that was the 3rd of September, and the show was on the 14th of September. And I said, "Oh shit, I can't make it. I have to be in quarantine." So he was like, "Well, I'll try and get you on a different show of the series at the end of September, but I can't guarantee it." And those 2 weeks, I was like just banging my head against the wall. I'm like, "Did I just do the worst mistake in my life?" And he called me after 2 weeks and he said, listen, you're on in Margate,
Yay.
end of September. So that's how it came about. I cannot describe to you the emotions. It was like a roller coaster. Like, one day I'm happy, the other day I'm confused, then I'm scared, then I'm sad, then I'm happy again. It's just very overwhelming. It was my first TV Debbie. The
Oh.
cameras did make me a bit nervous. There was three or four cameras. The people in the crowd, there was people who've done shows at Live at the Apollo. There were producers who've worked with Dylan Moran on that sitcom, that worked with Phoebe Waller-Bridge from Fleabag.
Wow.
Yeah,
Wow.
yeah. Like, people who've worked with artists who won BAFTAs and Grammys and who've gone on to America to do talk shows and on Amazon Prime and whatnot.
Wow.
So it was really nice. I got my name out there, and I can tell you one thing for sure is that they're the same as us mortals. Like, there's nothing. I mean,
Oh.
literally, after the show, we sat down and we all just started drinking. Then we went back to the hotel room of one of the producers and we kept drinking. We literally had a whole box, a whole plastic container of wine and vodka. And we took it in hand, me and one other producer. And we went down the street. We were so cheap, we didn't want to even get a cab. Imagine, these are producers that spend millions of pounds on shows.
Yeah.
And we didn't even want to get a cab in Margate for like three streets down. We took it in our hand, totally drunk. Like, people were watching us on the street thinking, like, who the fuck are these people? These, like, yeah, these are, and they have no idea, people that run the best shows in the country.
Wow.
So it was quite an experience. I ended up sleeping in my hotel room at 4 a.m. with a bunch of pistachios on my blouse. I wanted to get takeaway food, and I called reception, and the girl told me, it's Tuesday, it's 2 a.m. and it's Margate, like, nothing is open." She probably thought I was this spoiled London brat, you know, because in London we get service anytime.
You're just like, no, Macedonian, I need a croissant.
Yeah, I need cabbage, cabbage.
Cabbage, cabbage. Oh, that's so sweet. I mean, I thought your answer would be because of the accent, but you actually went into the whole story in, and it was so sweet to hear it. I don't know if are we allowed to say about the producer who got drunk. I'll probably leave it in the podcast if you're probably allowed to say it, right?
Yeah. Say it. Say it. Cool. There's no names, so you can say
no
it.
No names, exactly.
Although they were all drunk. their names are the following.
We'll just put beep, beep, beep.
Beep, beep. Potato, cabbage, beep, beep.
Rakio.
Rakio, yeah.
But, like, I know what you mean, because even with the podcast, I take my chance and I write to people. But even getting to talk to you right now, it's the same feeling as you say. They're all normal people and you just talk to them and you can't believe you're talking to these people. I definitely find this with my podcast. I'm like, I can't believe these people want to talk to me. I'm nobody. Like, why do they want to talk to me? But yeah. I just have the courage to write to them, including you. I'm like, oh my God, you're so funny. And it actually happened, as Mark said. I was watching you on TV, wrote to you on Instagram. Like, Vlad, come on, let's do a podcast. Sorry?
Yeah, you stalked me for a while, and then you said, this guy, yes.
Yeah, this guy.
Plus, he's Eastern European. He'll be all right.
Yeah, exactly. I have, like, this thing under my sleeve, like...
Yeah, it's like an ace in the deck.
Yes.
I don't know what I call it. Something like that.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
And the thing is, they were so humble as well. Like, these big names, and they were like asking me about my career, and they were trying to cater to me. I'm like, what are you guys crazy? Like, you are God to me. Like, and I was just pretending that, you know, I'm not sweating, I'm not nervous. Yes, this is absolutely normal. I deserve to be here. I deserve. It's very surreal. And everyone who saw the video back home, I mean, I've been getting like lots of positive messages, and I mean, it's a big thing. I'm the first Macedonian on BBC since the Balkan War, probably.
So you have a big fan base now, yeah?
Well, it's kind of growing. I don't want to brag, but I mean, statistically speaking, I think in 3 days I got around 4,000 followers on combined Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. I don't really use these platforms, so now I feel really pressured to keep posting funny things. So Daniela, since you do these type of podcasting and social media stuff, I think I'm gonna hire you as my PR.
Ooh, I got a job, yay!
Yeah.
But you know what? I have a love-hate relationship with social media. Honestly, I try to stay away from it as much as I can. I even have days off when I don't go at all. I don't have Facebook on my phone at all. Well, I don't have a phone at the moment because it's in repair for a few days now. But Yeah, I smashed it. Smashed the screen.
Mine broke as well 3 days ago.
Oh my God. What a coincidence. I think mine broke 3 days ago as well.
Really?
Yeah. It's been in repair for a few days. I think it was about, 3 days ago or something like that.
This is weird. What's going to happen next? You're going to tell me you're a comedian or I'm a podcaster? One or the other.
Well, your lifestyle seems pretty cool. So I think I'm going to become a comedian soon.
Yeah,
no, joking. I don't have the qualities for it. But
No, of course you do. Listen, everyone is funny. Humor is a naturally born characteristic in a human being. It's a cultural thing. Every culture has humor. It's just finding a way to use it on stage. That's all. It's just work. That's all it is.
That is cool.
Yeah.
So what's I imagine being on BBC is one of your dreams come true. What's the other thing that, I mean, do you want to be in a sitcom or do you want to continue stand up? That's the other thing. When I was searching for you and I was talking, of course, I was talking to you again this morning. I found this video with the fight scene. Because I knew you're a comedian, I was kind of expecting it to be funny. I don't know why, but are you into acting as well? Because I know you're saying you were doing some acting, but do you want to maybe at some point do a career in, I don't know, in movies as well? You don't have to reveal your plans, but like, I don't know.
No, I appreciate you asking me. I'd really love the next step to be, I mean, I love stand-up, and I'd love, my goal in stand-up is to do a national tour of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So I, like, you know, once I get properly, like, a good one-hour material, I will do a national tour, which is around 250 shows in the whole year. And then at the end of the year, I'll take the very, 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 very best bits of that, of all the show, and film a stand-up comedy special, you know, film like that's I think any comic's dream is to have their own stand-up comedy special. And hopefully
on Netflix.
Yeah, pitch it to Netflix or to some random Macedonian local television. Mm-hmm. Like in a small town somewhere. Yay, Vlad! Yakshadash!
Bloody so, Taylor!
Those are my stand-up comedy dreams. And the other thing I'm really looking forward to trying to be in or make is a sitcom. I from the bottom of my heart is like I actually want to produce one. I want to make a sitcom, and obviously I'll act in it, because I feel like it's gonna give me such a motivation to really kind of nail down and represent myself and where I come from, in this country. It will leave a big mark, and that is what I aim to do. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, Ricky Gervais did it. Miranda. What was it? Miranda. Yeah, I think they did it. They were just like wrote their own sitcoms and just played in them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And hopefully, cool, you know, see it go viral or whatever. It's not about, I mean, obviously I'd love a lot of people to see it so they can get to know me and get to know the Balkans and get to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's partly not in your control. What I can do is I'll try and be my best self and be funny, and the rest is up to the people whether they want to pay and subscribe and enjoy it. And if not, I will pack my bags and go back home.
No, we don't want to see this happening. I mean, it's definitely a big sign that you won that competition. It definitely gave you a boost in confidence to think, yes, I am on the right path, this is what I am supposed to do. So I think it's worth having all these dreams, and just as you say, keep working at it, keep being yourself, keep being funny, and just they'll all happen at some point.
Yeah. And in our next TED Talk emission, I'm gonna put a role in the sitcom, Daniela the podcaster.
Can I? Oh my god, this will be so exciting. You be careful what you say, because I'm going to believe you. So now I'm your PR and I have a role in your sitcom already.
Yeah. Wow, already like two jobs already.
See, you better make it good, because I want to be in your sitcom.
At least one of them will happen.
I can't promise with the PR, because I'm not that good with social media. Yeah. So I think it's the sitcom.
Or a painter. You could be a painter.
I can be a painter, yeah. Or at least, even if I can't get a role in your sitcom, at least I can put a painting on the wall in somewhere where you film it.
Oh, there we go. Also a good idea.
A small mention at the end of the video. This painting was
Yeah. Credits. This painting was painted by a woman in a motorhome.
Oh, yes.
Daniela Cantier. Cantier. Is it Cantier?
Yes, yes.
From?
Well, actually, it's an interesting. I got so used to reading my name, Cantier. Oh, I did the French version as well. Why not? Cantier. I don't even know how to say my But I had to adapt it, because I've been living in Belgium, so I had to have the French version of it, and then I lived in here, I have the Cantier version. But actually, the proper way to say it is Cancer.
Cancer? Really?
Yeah, so well, you did it so well. Yeah, because we have, so the T in my surname is actually with a little comma under, and the I has a, like a little hat.
Right, so it's Cancer.
Yes, well done. You pronounce it really well.
Very close to cancer, but did someone ever tell you that?
Yes. I think that's why I don't keep my original version.
That's why you don't have friends and live in a motorhome, because you are cancer. Cancer, Daniela, you're cancer. Family to everyone. We're going to expel you from our society, Daniela. Cancer.
Oh my god, just, I was laughing just watching you. And I was just talking to you. I can't stop laughing. My stomach is aching.
No, okay, you're so a nice person. You're a nice person. You just have cancer in your name. Maybe that's your horoscope sign. Cancer.
Okay. So I just wanted to ask you, talking about versions of name and stuff. Oh, actually, it's nothing to do with that, really. How many languages do you speak?
So I think I speak about four.
I mean, you probably understand more languages than you actually speak.
Yeah, that's true. I speak Bulgarian and Serbian. And obviously, Serbian and Croatian used to be Serbo-Croatian. Now they're separate, but they're quite similar. My Serbian and Croatian brothers will get offended at this, but it's true, they're quite similar. So so Bulgarian, Serbian, Croatian, that's three. Bosnian, that's four. And then English, that's five. Mm-hmm. And I understand and can speak very little Slovenian and very little Russian. Mm-hmm. But not enough to hold a conversation in that.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I said you probably understand more, because I have this thing as well. If you ask me how many languages I speak, none of them properly, even my own language, like I can't speak it properly. It's actually funny. I was trying to teach Mark some words in Romanian, and he was practicing them with my mom, and she looked at me. She's like, Daniela, you're teaching him the wrong version of Romanian. I can't speak any language properly, really. But yeah, just picking up on words and things like that. Like when we were traveling in Europe, we went to Slovenia and Slovakia. I couldn't understand what they were talking, but if I had a menu in front of me and they usually didn't have an English version of it, I could just like piece it up together and make up the, like, understand the words a little bit by just speaking different words. It's the same with Italian, for example, because I speak French and Romanian. I can't speak Italian. I know random words, but I can't speak it. But if somebody speaks Italian, I understand what they're trying to say.
Oh, right. Yeah, because Romanian has Latin roots, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why. Yeah, even I notice when I read Romanian, some bits are similar to Italian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So, talking about Romania, you were saying outside the recording that you really like Romania.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, is that I've only been to Romania for like 1 day or 2 days, but everything. So I don't know much about like being in the country in terms of whether it has beautiful mountains or lakes or whatever. It's just that I hang around a lot with Romanians here. Like one of my, I've got good friends, comedians, Romanians, like Radu.
Is it Victor or no?
Yeah, sorry. And Victor. Yeah, Victor Patrashkan and Radu.
I talked to him too.
You talked to him too as well. He's great. Victor is, he's weird, but I love him.
I'll send this part of recording to Victor.
Yeah, send it. Victor, you are a weird hobo, and I love you.
Oh.
Yeah. Hobo, not homo. I'm not homophobic. Just to clear that out. Hobo as in homeless. Because of his very stoic.
Like me.
Yeah. Like you. Yeah. He is homeless right now. He's traveling all around Europe doing gigs.
He was in Berlin last time I spoke to him.
Yeah. He's a proper European lad. He comes back. When does he come back? I don't know. I feel like he's always traveling. Like he's in London for a few months and then he's gone. It's like he's here, he's not here. I wish I could do that. I'm kind of too. I get too like. Once I stay in one place, this is where I stay. I don't want to move anywhere else. I should travel more.
You should get a motorhome.
Yeah, I should get a motorhome. That's when I'm rich and famous. I'll get a motorhome.
Yeah, and after the sitcom, where I'll be in.
Yeah, with the. Then you can launch your painting career, go do exhibitions.
Whoa.
Ah, my paintings have been selling in movies. And.
That's it. I'm the gate. Like, you're my gateway for fame.
Yeah, the gateway for fame. Yes, I'm right here. Then after you, all these other painters will come from Moldova and from Estonia and Latvia and Ukraine.
Yeah. We'll create a path for them.
Let's yeah, exactly. They'll come with their offerings of potato and cabbage. Please accept our offering, Vlad. And let us in into the temple of work. I don't know. I'm just.
So did you drink palinka then? Did you say? Do you have it at all?
No, we don't have palinka, but I drank palinka when I first went to Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
We went to this village outside Newcastle. We were on the seminar, and there was this guy. He was Hungarian, Tomas.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very classic. I knew it was a strong drink because he gave it to me in a water bottle.
That's typical in Moldova as well.
Right?
Yeah.
He's like,
yeah.
Ooh, try this. It's really strong. I was like, what is it? He's like, palinka.
Mm-hmm.
And I smelled it. I'm like, this is not palinka. This is diesel. Literally drinking petrol. And we started drinking around 9 p.m. and we finished this 1.5 liter bottle by 11.
Oh my God.
And the next thing I remember, it was 3 a.m. And we were in the backyard of a kindergarten. And there was the swings. You know, So, but this was like, it was like one big swing on a big rope from one hill to the other hill. And you just kind of jump on and it gets you to the other side. And the next thing my brain remembers is like, it's kind of like I woke up in the middle on that swing, me and Tomas hanging together on a rope and laughing. I don't know why. Like complete blackout. And then we both fell into the mud and we were just laughing like idiots. And the security guy came and he was just petrified of us. Because it's these two guys talking in a really strong accent.
Yeah.
Just. And I thought to myself, the next day I woke up and I had one shoe missing.
Oh my God.
I had mud all over my jacket. And there was some strange guy texting me, telling me, oh, last night was sick. So I'm never drinking palinka again.
I was just going to ask you if we ever try it again. That's it, out of the question.
No, that was it. That was it.
But
I would drink again, but in small number.
Mm-hmm. That's what we do. We put alcohol in water bottle. It's called recycling, right?
Yeah, it is recycling.
No, but honestly, it's such a weird thing. And also, I don't know if it's a thing in your family, for example, but it's a big thing in Moldova for moms to send parcels to their children wherever they are abroad. And there's a huge business actually with people just driving little vans and going to different countries to deliver little parcels with alcohol and homemade food. And sometimes that food is going off because it's too hot. And we have to explain to our moms, don't send us food, just send us alcohol.
Yeah. Alcohol first, then life.
But you don't have a thing like that, yeah?
What we do is, I mean, when my grandma was still alive, she used to pack up Ivar. Do you know what Ivar is?
I don't think so.
It's like mashed, roasted red peppers.
And oh, no, I don't know.
Yeah, traditionally people used to make it in their in like the 90s when the laws were a bit loose. So they used to just make ivory in their house. Now you need a license because
wow.
And so we used to do it every autumn going towards winter. It was a thing. And my grandma would pack up like jars and jars of this with some like homemade bread and take it with you, son, because so you don't stay hungry. And it's just this really funny. And obviously a bit of rakia as well. Always, always.
Of course.
To keep you warm.
That's the thing. Like my mom is always worried that I'm going to go hungry. And then people in the UK wonder why I eat so often. They're like, Daniela, you're always eating.
They probably think like this woman, she doesn't know how to cook. She's getting all this food. They're feeding her.
I'm actually lucky that my boyfriend is a really good cook. So he's just cooking and I'm eating all day.
Oh, right. Show off. Okay. That's good. That's good. I'm working on my cooking skills. Oh. I can make pretty good risotto, but that's about it.
Maybe you should learn how to do your what was it called, those meat stuff things that you missed.
Oh, puneti piperki, the paprika.
You should learn to do those and like sell them.
The sarma or the sarma, you mean?
Sarma, yeah.
Yeah, sarma is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
as a backup plan. If your cooking doesn't go right. No, I'm joking. We have the plan for you. You're going to write a successful sitcom.
About sarma.
About sarma.
This sitcom is about sarma and the main role starring Daniela Cancer.
Oh, I can be the one eating it.
Yeah. The cancer is eating the sarma.
That's what I'm best for. Just eat. You can just feel me eating. So, like, you know how the Black Books is just done in a library? You can just have a sitcom in a, like, bakery.
Yeah, it could be, isn't it? Could be just a bakery or something.
Yeah,
but most probably, knowing myself, I would jump from location to location all the time.
Of course, and that will get you traveling as well, to be a nomad as your friends.
Nah, I'm not filming back home. I'm not leaving this country. That's it.
Oh, that's it. That's all.
I'm staying here. I'm British. I'm only saying I'm Macedonian in this podcast. When people ask me on the street, what, I'm British.
See, where did you say from? Manchester.
Manchester,
Manchester, yeah.
From Blackpool. No, I don't know what accent. Do they have an accent in Blackpool?
I don't know. I just watched Strictly Come Dancing in Blackpool. That's all I know about Blackpool.
I had this book. Well, my flatmate had this book. Who was done by a friend of her who's a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to take photos of the most bizarre situations on stag do's and hen parties.
Oh my God, that's a very ridiculous
in Blackpool. And there's over 50 photos. And I mean, I don't know whether to laugh, whether to cry, whether you're confused. I mean, the things that... The photos are just like the worst, like this people getting taped naked to a lamp post on the street. Just a woman, a really really big woman, defecating on a guy's chest.
Oh my God.
In a pub while everyone is just laughing and the guy is unconscious. Just really, you look at them and you think, wow. This is what humans are capable of when they're drunk.
It seems that what happens in Blackpool doesn't stay in Blackpool.
No. It goes into a photo book and gets spread around the world.
See?
Yeah.
That reminds me a little bit of the first Christmas, or was it New Year? Me and my other... So I have an Ukrainian friend and another... Well, I have more friends. I know you think I don't have friends.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you don't have friends.
So an Ukrainian friend and a Moldovan friend, and it was the first year in the UK, and we just thought, oh, we'll go and celebrate somewhere. There was a ball in central London. My Ukrainian friend, she bought tickets. We, you know, going to celebrate, have a nice time. We got there. It was an absolute mess. First of all, it was really hard to get to central London. It was actually New Year's night, or like the eve or something like that. And it was super hard to get there. The place was like fully packed. And I mean, it was just hard to get in. We decided not to stay in anyway. And we just got outside. And there are so many just drunk people on the floor in central London. We're just like, we didn't sign up for this. We just wanted to have a nice ball for New Year's Eve.
We didn't want all this.
But this is the first time I saw a bit of what you're describing, when people are really drunk on the street and doing all sorts of weird stuff and police trying to lift them up. We're like, oh my God, this is not a New Year's Eve we thought about. But yeah, it is what it is. It's quite fun.
Well, I'm glad you invited me absolutely to this thing, and definitely very, very interesting questions, I would say.
Thank you.
And these are definitely the most insightful I've had, especially regards stereotypes about Eastern Europe. And that was a very interesting conversation. I think it actually inspired me to write some material about it today. There you have it.
Can I leave this bit in the podcast to have a bit of praise on myself?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. No, but I mean, it all comes from the interesting work that you do, and you're an interesting person in general, so it just comes naturally to ask all these things, because
Stop it.
Yeah.
Plus, you're an interesting person too.
I just can't wait for you to get really famous, and I can have just like, you know, this podcast to tease you with. And I can remember those times.
When you were on the podcast. And get 10% of the royalties.
Exactly. Like, do you want to hear Vlad saying something really controversial? Give the money. I'll sell it to, what is it? The Sun.
To the Sun, exactly. Stand-up comedy in a campsite and a motorhome.
Thank you so much, Vlad. I really had a nice time. I honestly already knew I'm going to laugh so much just talking to you. You definitely made my day.
Me too. I really appreciate it. It was a really nice conversation. Nice to meet you, Daniela. Take care. Have a nice day.
You too.
Keep in touch.
Bye. Oh, wait. How do you say bye in Macedonian?
Ciao.
Like Italian. Ciao.
Yeah, ciao. Same in Romanian. Yes, ciao.
Yeah, we use ciao in Romanian.
Ciao as well. Ciao. Ciao.
Ciao.